Friday, July 2nd, Lucy's 18th birthday, and the 10th anniversary of the severest trial we ever knew, Lyndon and I. I suddenly discovered I couldn't, after all, without girdle and well-combed hair, go around slouchy and sloppy and happy in my self-appointed vacation. So harnessed and enslaved can one become, trying to look one's best. And so I got a rush appointment with my old friend Mr. Pear, and went over for a permanent. This was sort of a psychological surrender. I got home just in time to have lunch with Linda in my bedroom, a meal we gulped down off of trays, while I handed papers back and forwards to Liz, saying, tell them this, tell them that, and in between, writing out my statement for the press, the simplest and shortest possible, to express what is happening today, that Lucy Baines Johnson is being baptized into the Catholic Church at 2 o'clock at St. Matthew's Cathedral. She has been in taking instructions from Father James Montgomery since last September. The President and Mrs. Johnson and our sister Linda were present at the service together with a few friends. Dear Linda, my mind was on many things. I was conscious I wasn't quite reaching her. It was a fragmented hour. She isn't getting the most out of life this summer. Young and beautiful to me, and so very bright and alive, and a delicious sense of humor. And she feels it, I think, more than either Linda or I about Lucy becoming a Catholic. Linda and I had tried to do this as simply and quietly, with dignity and in a very personal manner, discussing it only with Lucy and Father Montgomery and Linda Bird and the young folks Lucy had asked to be her sponsors. I never thought we would succeed, but as 2 o'clock approached, it looked as though we were the only ones who knew it. Linda was standing by. Linda Bird and I were dressed. Only Lucy we were waiting for. If only we could get through the next hour in a dignified, inconspicuous manner. And then, just as I was handing to Liz the envelope with a simple little statement in it about Lucy's being baptized, in walked Lucy, about as inconspicuous as Bridget Bardot. In a lovely white lace dress, it would have made a fine wedding dress, her black hair shining, her eyes full of stars, a rosary and prayer book, I guess, clasping her hands. Liz took one look at her and said, my God, I've been with you through pierced ears, a stingray car, that party where you had beer, and now what is this? We all melted into laughter. He looked at the announcement. I said, tell all your press folks in another 15 minutes or so. And then off we drove to St. Matthew's, the four of us. And I, unable to forget the memory of another service there, the funeral service for President Kennedy. Father Montgomery was standing at the street door to meet us. We walked in quietly, quick but not hurried, and went to the front of the church, where with James Montalero and dear little Warren Lynn in a beige dress and a beige mantilla, standing by, Father Montgomery officiating, we went through the very simple ceremony of Lucy's first step into Roman Catholicism. There were a few elderly ladies in black dresses, very much absorbed in their own prayers. There were a few nuns here and there, a dozen or so, odd worshippers who paid us little attention. And then we rose and went back to the baptismal font. The priest tipped Lucy's head backward and baptized her. Only a few words, and then he smiled and said, congratulations. We all kissed her. Linda shook hands with Father Montgomery. I noticed that Linda Bird left swiftly with tears in her eyes and was down the steps into the car before the others of us emerged. All the Betts family were there, even a relative who is a nun, and of course Beth Jenkins, besides Pat Nugent, two or three more friends from Marquette. I walked out the door deliberately, not swift and not slow, because I didn't want there to be anything furtive about this, and yet no showmanship. I did not see a camera in sight. The whole thing had taken probably less than 15 minutes. Lucy remained for her confession, and Linda and I and Linda Bird drove home. I could not help but think, we went in 4, and we came out 3. But it was done, and our days give little chance for philosophizing. All plans for Lucy's birthday party had been made in the solarium upstairs. Only about 30 or so of her best friends, lots of them were house guests. Beth and her boyfriend, Linda Bird had Dave down, Warry Lynn, Pat Nugent, one or two others from Marquette. I'd called Willie Day to come over and be mama. And so there was just time back at the White House to do some last signing of letters and checking with Ashton and Liz and Helen before we boarded the helicopter at 3:20 for New York, where Lennon was going to address the National Education Association. Thousands of teachers gathered from all over the land. On board the plane, who should there be but Senator Morse? Lyndon spoke easily, jocularly. I spoke. And Carl Albert, dear smiling Carl, the little giant, they call him, always plenty of shop talk, he and Lennon are together. And handsome, urbane Ambassador Lodge, who motorcaded in to Madison Garden, the streets lined with cheering people, the bridges overhead as we passed the World's Fair, crowded with masses. It was quickly done. Lennon proposed a teachers' corps for areas in the United States that were economically and culturally deprived. It was a clockwork timed in-and-out trip, and then we were back on the plane headed for Texas, so ready to relax emotionally, mentally, and physically. Senator Morse had gone his own way, and Ambassador Lodge to Boston, I believe, but Carl Albert and the Homer Thornberrys were in the main cabin with us, and over drinks and dinner there was plenty of shop talk. Feeling disappointed, a little hurt, all of us, about the number of times Jake Pickle had voted against the administration, the Democratic National Committee sent Lyndon a letter, a sort of summary of the records of the new members of Congress. Pickle's was anti-administration enough so that they cited him, the president's own congressman, as one reason why it was hard to persuade the congressman to vote for administration measures. Speaking of his ambitions to help Negroes, in his tenure as presidency, whatever it was, Lyndon said, "By God, if Martin Luther King catches up with me, he has got to get up early and march fast." He admired Judge Thurgood Marshall and spoke of the possibility of asking him to be Solicitor General, and then, if he proved himself as an outstanding man that all the nation could be proud of, perhaps when a vacancy on the Supreme Court opened up, he might make him a justice of the Supreme Court, the first of his race. In talking about the Congress, of course, it got around to Judge Smith of Virginia and the difficulties he was placing in the path of passing the ARA bill. He said, "I want to wait a few more Thursdays." I don't know what Thursdays mean. I guess it's just when the committee reports. Lyndon said, "We can't beat the Russians with Judge Smith in charge." He went on to say, "We have got to get our program between now and October the 3rd. And then next year, we'll tackle transportation and a few more things and wrap them up and get out of here before Easter." I looked out the window and there was a new moon. The last one I'd spent partly in the Virgin Islands, complete surcease and delight, in the easy company of Carl Albert and Homer Thornberry. Politics, the legislative procedure, the grist of our meal filled those 3 hours. Lyndon said, "I've been in public life 34 years, but of all the things I'm glad to be the architect of, it is putting the Catholics and the Protestants and the Jews together in the educational bill." His accent over and over in the 18 or so months he's been in this office has been on education, education, education. When we landed at Bergstrom, we were met by Colonel and Mrs. Bender. She's so pretty, with a deep South voice, a big kiss and a smile. The moon was out, and the last rays of sunset were in the sky. But Lyndon was yearning for the lake, for the boat, and so he said, "Let's go to Haywood." It aroused no enthusiasm for me. The nights have been sleepless lately. The Benders joined us. We went in the helicopter to Haywood. Lyndon and the Thornberrys and the Benders and the Morsons went for a boat ride, and I went happily, exhausted and relieved, home to the ranch. I wanted to talk to Linda, to worry, and tell her how much we loved her, and if there was any little coming storm about Lucy and her step today, she worried, must not feel the least bit blamed or responsible, and then to sleep gloriously a little past 10, the earliest ever. But I woke a little bit past 12 when I heard Lyndon and went in and crawled in with him. It is a never-ceasing amazement to me how he can go to bed so late and get up so early.